welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week we review Morning Glory, Unstoppable, and Marwin Call. And now, here to present their insightful reviews are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film. And first up, we have a new comedy, Morning Glory, starring Rachel McAdams and Harrison Ford.
I'd like to offer you the position of co-host of Daybreak.
After the career that I've had.
You happen to be a pretentious, fatuous idiot.
A fatuous idiot who makes three times what you make.
Mike is offended by a word in the next story.
It's about Easter chicks.
I'm not saying the word fluffy.
Welcome back to Daybreak.
It's only my job. It's not my whole life, right?
Take what you want.
Becky, played by McAdams, is an up-and-coming television producer who gets the opportunity to save a struggling network morning show and boost her career at the same time in this film from Paramount Pictures. The only thing standing in her way is her new co-host, a curmudgeonly old-time news anchor who sees the whole morning show thing as quite beneath him. The PG-13 Morning Glory isn't a bad picture, but it isn't very good either. It's amiable and it hits its marks in its obvious, predictable ways. And unlike many of the comedies we've had to endure over the last few weeks, I didn't feel like I wanted to put my eyes out during the entire time the film wasn't spooling. That said, I really can't say I enjoyed myself either. Sure, there are some funny moments, and I have to say that Harrison Ford as the curmudgeonly Mike Pomeroy is quite good in the beginning. But I found his bah humbug act got a bit old pretty quick. And he's awfully flat when he should have been at least a little energized, particularly in his big coup near the end of the film. Now, Rachel McAdams is fine here, the typical wide-eyed producer ready to prove herself, though a little too cutesy for my tastes at times. There is a romance with a hunky producer, played by the requisite love interest Patrick Wilson, just keeps turning up in this role time and time again. It's nice, but it's a little attenuated if they wanted that to be a major subplot. But it's Jeff Goldblum, surprise, surprise, who steals every scene, many of them via telephone, as Becky's network boss. This is the second great supporting role that Goldblum has had in recent months, and I hope this signals a sort of renaissance for his film career. Now, the flip side is Diane Keaton as Pomeroy's long-in-the-tooth, perky co-host, who is particularly terrible here, with nothing much to do other than to shriek occasionally and, yes, literally kiss frogs. The funny stuff is amusing, the frog bit included, particularly how the gang at the middling Daybreak show that McAdams is trying to save gets into the spirit and puts themselves through all sorts of hijinks from skydiving to sumo wrestling. It is pretty funny, but at 1 hour and 40 minutes, the film spends about half the picture getting to this stuff, and it diverts our focus instead to Becky running around having goofy meetings and scene after scene with Pomeroy 86ing her ideas. So it's sort of like Morning Glory. I chuckled a few times. I found the performances to be okay, but I don't know if I'd tune into Daybreak, and that's the film's fictional show, for a second viewing. So I'm giving this a C+ for effort.
Oh, Mr. Film, come on. I mean, you said Rachel McAdams is cutesy, but I like cutesy. And, you know, I've been railing a lot lately on how gross-out humor is not comedy. And in Morning Glory, this is a good example of what I mean good comedy actually is. This is quite funny, I think, with real jokes that are ingrained in the characters, their attitudes, and they actually serve the plot and move the story forward. Now, you called out Harrison Ford. I think he's great here. He's not a likable guy, but we do sympathize with him. In fact, yeah. I think we sympathize with almost everyone's viewpoint in the movie, and the fact that they're all at odds with each other builds the drama and tension well, and all of this is released in a funny way that serves this story. Like I said, Rachel McAdams is cute here. I liked her idealistic yet workaholic portrayal of Becky. She's smart, determined, and well-suited to juggle the demands of producing a failing morning television show. She's charged with the task of basically making lemonade out of lemons, and is successful. I liked her journey, and I wouldn't mind another take of Morning Glory. Now, Mr. Film, in all honesty, this is probably a B-plus movie, but I have to give it extra credit for avoiding the gross-out humor that is so rampant in comedies today. So I'm going to finalize with an A-minus on this.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I can see your point there, and I do appreciate the fact that they didn't go for the gross-out humor. I think that it, particularly folks who have been going to horrible things like Due Date and hoping against hope that it was going to be funny, I have to say that this is much better. I have to say that I'm a big fan of the TV show 30 Rock. It's a much more obviously silly sort of approach to a TV show.
That is a good show.
That's a great show. And this, I think, almost gets there a couple of times, but it just really didn't quite make the grade for me. So I agree with you with a lot of your points, and particularly the gross-out humor stuff. And I think Rachel McAdams in hopefully she'll be around for maybe another few pictures, and we can, you know, really see what she can do. I think that I like her better than a few other of the other A-listers that are out there right now. So I have some hopes for her. But this one just missed the mark for me.
Well, that's fair enough. I do disagree with you about Diane Keaton. I think she's fine here, and I think she fits the role well. And there is a good dynamic and chemistry with Harrison Ford. In fact, I think the chemistry between all the characters works pretty well, whether they're at odds or they're interested in each other or whatever. So,
yeah, I think actually what could have happened here, and I think the same thing happened in our next picture as well, there was probably a lot more script here than they had room for in the film. So certain relationships and things like that had to be attenuated a little bit. So I think some character development may have gotten trimmed out a little bit. But overall, I agree with your points, but it just still didn't quite do it for me.
All right. Well, let's jump into our next movie here. Mr. Film, this is a movie about stopping a runaway train with Denzel Washington called Unstoppable.
We have an unmanned train rolling into a highly populated area with no air brakes.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about a train. We're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building.
I need to know where that train is.
We're not sure.
We'll find out.
Watch out!
This ain't training. In training, they just give you an F. Out here, you get killed.
Now, Mr. Film, this movie feels like it should have been a one-hour TV movie, but instead Hollywood gave it an over-bloated budget and lengthened it to nearly 1 hour and 40 minutes. The basic story involves a runaway train, thanks to an incompetent employee, played by Ethan Suplee. The train is barreling down the main line at full throttle without a driver. It is a simple story, and Rosario Dawson, as a dispatcher, is doing everything she can to coordinate the stopping of the train. But when all else fails, it's left to a seasoned engineer and a wet-behind-the-ears conductor, played by Denzel Washington and Chris Pine, respectively, who are driving their train right into the direction of the oncoming disaster waiting to happen. There are several attempts to stop the train, and blah, 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 blah. In the end, Washington and Pine try to latch on to this thing traveling at 70 miles an hour with their own engine to try to stop it. Now, director Tony Scott, who brought us some great movies like Top Gun, Days of Thunder, True Romance, and Crimson Tide, does a fine job here. But there's not a lot going on character-wise. Subplots involve Denzel Washington's kids and Chris Pine dealing with a restraining order from his ex-wife, and they're all pretty flat. The action is good, but the story is only serviceable. Now, I didn't hate Unstoppable, and it is thrilling at moments, but when all is said and done, I just didn't care that much. I mean, the real miss here is Denzel Washington, who is completely wasted. Really, anybody could have been cast in this role, and it wouldn't have changed the movie that much. Actually, I felt that way about most of the cast, most of whom were underdeveloped or of a cardboard nature. Now, if you like big-budget action, this PG-13 rated picture released by 20th Century Fox is intense, but in the end, just okay and very forgettable. I'm going with a C+.
I'm pretty much with you on this one, Mr. Movie, but I do have to say that the train stopping stuff was pretty nail-biting for me, but I think that's just a testament to director Tony Scott's ability to manipulate. I think there's a very manipulative film here. Mm-hmm. The film is, you know, and it is pretty emotionally flat overall. I think you really hit the nail on that one. And everyone is pretty much wasted in what could have been an interesting picture. And as a matter of fact, the train stopping aspect of the picture could have been used as a good old-fashioned MacGuffin. You know, that's just this kind of framing device to explore some of the issues Scott touches on throughout the picture. family loyalty, experience versus connections, the cost of bravery, youth versus their elders, choosing to put your life in danger when you don't have to. We get none of that. Instead, we get a lot of yelling and noise and spectacular stunts. Now, that being said, I have to say the action work here is quite good, and those are the parts of the film I enjoyed the most. Anytime we cut back to the characters doing something somewhat emotional, you know, bearing their soul or something, I pretty much lost interest. And I have to say that I liked how the picture resolved itself. I do like how the final action sequence resolved itself. But like you, it left me all a little flat. And that's not what an action film should do. So because I like the action stuff, I'm going to give this a solid C.
All right, that sounds fine. You know, another thing that really annoyed me was the they're cutting back and forth between the news reports. And these news reporters have more information than anybody, and they get it, like, right away. And it's just, it's really absurd. I mean, they come up with these models of, oh, the train's going to show, and they have, like, these computer-animated models of the train crashing and stuff. It's like, you couldn't have made that in, they cut from
20 minutes.
Yeah, in, like, 5 minutes or whatever. It's just totally ridiculous.
Yeah, it is over the top. And again, you know, it's another missed opportunity. Is this about how the media covers disasters? You know, you kind of lose sight of.
It was kind of cheating in a way, telling us, you know, trying to tell us how to feel about it. And they didn't need that at all. I mean, there was enough there for us to be interested and for it to be intense. And that just really took away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. This was a real wasted effort on Tony Scott's part. And a lot of good people are wasted in here too. So it's unfortunate.
All right. Well, let's move along to our next movie, Mr. Film.
Our next film is about the healing power of imagination, is the theme of Marenkal from Open Face.
When the teenagers kicked my head to pieces, they wiped all memory of everything.
What's the first thing I gotta work on?
That's my imagination.
Everything's real.
Everybody has a dream. Everybody wishes they had a double that could do the things that they could never do.
I built Marenkal for me, for my therapy.
It gets stranger by the moment, doesn't it?
In 2000, Mark Hogenkamp, an up-and-coming graphic artist, was brutally attacked by 5 men. He survived, but his memories didn't. Without the resources to undergo traditional rehabilitation, Mark uses his imagination to heal his psychic wounds, creating Marenkal, a 1/6 size World War II fantasy world using G.I. Joes and Barbie dolls to stand in for himself, his friends, and his attackers. He creates an elaborate story involving these stand-ins that includes friendship, intrigue, romance, betrayal, and heroism as a way to cope with the consequences of the attack, and takes photos to document and relive these elaborate scenes. Along the way, Mark is discovered and has to make the painful decision to turn his shield into a means to reemerge from his shell. Now, Mr. Movie, we've seen quite a few documentaries in the last few weeks, and probably a few more than you would have liked, and none have really worked all the way through for various reasons. But this is the exception, and I have to say it's probably one of the best films of the year, and certainly the best documentary we've seen. To peer inside the mind of a man who has lost everything, quite literally, and is using his imagination in such a powerful way to reclaim his broken life is fascinating and inspiring. And I love how the film is about Marenkal. It's not about the crime, though we do get some basic details about it that are kind of important. Or about how his family and friends think about this quite unprecedented form of therapy. Those are side issues. The central focus is about Mark and his alternate reality. The film is just right at 83 minutes and is razor-focused on Mark and his work. Now, that's probably due, in part, to first-time documentary director Jeff Mulberg, whose day job is as a motion picture editor. What we come away with is a portrait of an artist as a self-repaired man. And he's a complicated, intelligent, exasperating, angry, sympathetic, interesting guy. And watching him create his story, his alternate reality, is quite literally jaw-dropping at times. This is a real story told in an compelling, interesting, offbeat way, with subject and documentarist obviously working together. I have to say, probably the behind the scenes would make just as intriguing a film in and of itself. But what I like best is that the film really is a celebration of the imagination. And I think that's what many films about art really lack, is an acknowledgement or an exploration of imagination as the fuel of the art. What we get is an artist and their finished work, not the process. And we really see kind of the process of what this guy is doing. You could say that Mark has just taken what he knows about his biography and his attack and has been building on that since then, just translating it into a story that he can control, that he can use to make sense of his life and his bad luck. But what he does in creating this world and how real his imaginary world is in a word, stunning. I've been thinking about this film for days and days, and I think I'll be thinking about it for days more, particularly the surprise at the end, which just left me gasping with the implications of it. So this is, for me, a not-to-be-missed film. If you love learning about interesting people doing interesting things in a compelling, offbeat sort of way, go see this. And I'm giving this an A. This is an A picture for me.
All right, Mr. Film. You know, I think you make some really good points. This is definitely an interesting documentary. I don't think it's the best movie we've seen, and certainly not the best documentary. I think Waiting for Superman is a little more compelling and a little more important, given the gravity of it. But this is a strange and bizarre movie. It's sadly tragic in many ways. Now, Mr. Film, we reviewed Dinner for Schmucks a while ago, and Steve Carell plays this guy who's deemed a moron, who makes these really fantastic dead mouse dioramas. Now, with Marwin Call, this fiction becomes fact, and it really is bizarre and sad in many ways. For those who have been listening to the show and heard my review of Schmucks, I said at the time that I didn't really know how to feel about these dioramas. They are dramatic and artistically very good, but they are stuffed dead mice. You know, and I kind of feel the same way about this, and I'm sorry to say that I haven't really resolved this in my mind.
Okay.
The documentary does offer some insight into what kind of person makes these things. And in this case, the photos of the army, you know, of the army men and the Barbie doll scenes, they are really, really good. There is a seriousness in them. It's not tongue in cheek, wink, wink, ha ha, look at what I'm doing, but rather a self-expression of a man illustrating and playing out the pain he's going through in life. And in that sense, it's cathartic. I think there's some really good themes here of catharsis. But it kind of also shows a sad disconnect with reality on the part of the artist, too. But this is how he copes with it, and that's probably the best thing for him, given his context.
Yeah.
This is an interesting documentary, but like I said, I don't think it's probably for everybody. But if you were fascinated by those mouse dioramas and Dinner for Schmucks and want to seek some understanding of them or how you feel about them like I was, then definitely check this out. And I do think, Mr. Film, that the third act in this movie is a little slow and meandering. It is interesting to see the cathartic release of this disturbed guy, though, and I'm going to give it a B.
Okay. You know, with Dinner with Schmucks, I mean, you bring up a good point. I was actually thinking about this earlier today, that these mouse dioramas they're played for a laugh. This is serious stuff. This isn't a guy who's just goofing around. This is a guy who's trying to rebuild his life. And what I did like about what the filmmakers did is that I think they know it's kind of strange and offbeat and to some people would be weird and bizarre. But they approach it in a very serious sort of way. And I like that. I like that they don't make fun of the subject, because I think that it would have been easy to do that in lesser hands would have found the more focus more on the bizarre stuff as opposed to the important part this therapy plays in this guy's life. For me, this is a very memorable thing, and it really just grabbed me. So I stand by that A. But I can see your point as well.
No, that's fair enough. And you know, I think the dioramas in Dinner for Schmucks, you know, I think they worked because from Steve Carell's point of view, he was taking it seriously. And in this movie, he is. Now, obviously in Schmucks, that was played for comedy. But it, you know, they, like, you look at them and they're like, they're really good. And there's kind of a joy in them. In Marwin Call, they're not. You know, they are intense and dramatic, and he's replaying this horrible thing that happened to him, so they're not funny. But in Schmucks, they are funny because there's kind of a joy in them, but there's also that seriousness, which is a commonality between these two pictures. So yeah. I don't really even think that they're necessarily making fun of them. I mean, they are in Dinner for Schmucks, but if you put yourself in the shoes of Carell, it is very similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and just so people know, Mark Hoogenkamp was severely brain damaged from the attack.
Yeah.
And though he has all of his language skills and things of that sort, he had a lot of neurological damage and psychiatric problems because of this. And it was a horrible, horrible attack. They show some pictures there, not for the squeamish. So
yeah. And it is interesting. I mean, can you imagine waking up one day without any of your memories? I mean, how would that make you different? I mean, that is an interesting perspective. And
that is really interesting. I think one of the most affecting scenes in the picture is when he's watching videos of his wedding, from 25 years ago. And, you know, he knows it's him. He knows this woman. The woman in the pictures is his wife. He doesn't remember any of it. He doesn't remember anything of any of those experiences, any of his life experiences. He started as a blank slate, but all he had was his imagination to work from. So I think it's really a fascinating picture. So I think that it's worth it and inspiring, and I think it does what a good documentary can do, or a good story in general does. It introduces you to a new world and brings up really interesting themes and issues that are inspiring and makes you think and makes you walk away from the film thinking about them for more than 20 seconds. I can't remember half the things we've seen, and we've been doing this show for the last 20 shows.
18 shows, Mr. Film.
18 shows. So I forgot about half the films we've seen because that's how bad they were. So this is not one of them. So I'm putting this on my best list for the year thus far.
Great, great, awesome. All right, well, that wraps up the show for this week. Mr. Film gave Morning Glory a C+, and I gave it an A-.
And Mr. Movie gave Unstoppable a C+, and I gave it a C.
And finally, for Marwin Call, Mr. Film gave it an A, and I gave it a B. Now, next show, we're going to review Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. That should be fun. And then we're going to look at another documentary. It's called Brzezinski, the Movie. So that wraps up the show for this week. Visit our website at www.moviefilmshow.com. If you want to send us an email, just write to mail@moviefilmshow.com. And always remember that you can subscribe in iTunes. Just tell your friends to go to our website and click on the iTunes link in the subscribe box. And that's it for this show. Mr. Film, I'll see you next show.
I'll see you next show, Mr. Movie. Probably the behind the scenes would make just as intriguing a film in and of itself.
All right.
All right.
We forgot to announce the thing, but we'll just do that next show.
Okay.
All right, cool.
All right, good.
And do you want to do the Brzezinski movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit, let me start that over.
What did you give it?
C plus.
C+, and I gave it a C.
Rachel McAdams is cute here. I liked her idealistic dick, yet...
There was probably a lot more script here than they had room for in the movie or in the film. But all he had was his imagination to work from. The healing power of imagination.
Subplots involved
friendship, intrigue, romance, betrayal, and heroism. Family loyalty, experience versus connections, the cost of bravery, youth versus their elders, choosing to put your life in danger when you don't have to.
Top Gun, Days of Thunder, True Romance, and Crimson Tide.
Compelling, interesting, offbeat, complicated, intelligent, exasperating, angry, sympathetic, interesting, strange, and offbeat, and to some people would be weird. And
blah, 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 in the end.
Those are side issues. This is serious stuff, though a little too cutesy for my tastes at times. But this is the exception.
Well, that's fair enough. It's not tongue-in-cheek, wink, wink, ha-ha, look at what I'm doing.
That's a great show.